This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Greeley, one team like the UNC Bears, and one bank who cheers as loud as you do. Bank of Colorado, proud partner of UNC Athletics, member FDIC.
And horrifying news story.
I don't know if this is the kind of hard-hitting news you're used to.
Got some good news and I got some bad news.
Now this could be the big story of the summer. Network is going to be wanting plenty of coverage.
What do you mean, silly? I mean, that's real news.
Well, one of the more controversial basketball players in the NBA right now, Angel, is Patrick Beverley. Couple of different things happened last night for him. And one of them, well, he got into an altercation with a fan, which he came out this morning saying, "I vow to be better." But Milwaukee Bucks guard Pat Beverley indicated that a video showing him throwing a ball at a spectator Thursday night was misleading, but later added that, "I have to be better." Well, he threw the ball. How misleading can it be?
Yeah, and I saw a report this morning from Shams, one of the insiders. The exchange between Patrick Beverley and one of the fans in Indianapolis escalated when the Bucks were breaking huddle Thursday night and the fan yelled, "Cancun, Cancun on three."
Well, I mean, that's, you got to develop some, you know, some thicker skin there, because I mean, that's the thing. Yeah, that's kind of the thing now. If a team that's supposed to win or a team that's just kind of in shambles loses a series in kind of an uninspired effort, and again, I know they had injuries, that's the thing. So you got to be ready for that.
Yeah,
good deal.
The NBA is looking into the exchange.
Who was the first team that coined that? Because somebody actually did it. Yeah, was it the Lakers? It wasn't the Lakers, was it?
I want to say it was the Lakers.
It was the Lakers after Kobe. Kobe was on. It was the end of the season, I think, and they were a bad team. And Kobe, it was the years with Kobe there, I believe. But I was just thinking about that. When did that start? And I'm pretty sure it started with the Lakers. Everything kind of dramatic starts with the Lakers. So here's another one, Angel, with Patrick Beverley. He's sitting down to do his post game, and there are a ton of... Oh, go ahead.
Real quick. It was the Lakers with Nick Van Exel. Their head coach did it.
Nick was the head coach of the Lakers?
Mm-hmm.
Why do I not remember that? I mean, I know he played for the Lakers.
Yeah, it was during a team break that,
oh my gosh,
he thought he was making a funny joke while the Lakers were getting eliminated. It annoyed everyone and basically ended his time with the soon-to-be dynasty.
So he was the coach at the time?
He may have been the assistant coach.
Okay,
he was a part of the staff.
I just don't even remember him being on the coaching staff, but that's okay. I know he played for the Nuggets for a minute. Here's the other one. Patrick Beverley is sitting down for postgame after the Bucks were eliminated. He's surrounded by reporters, as they tend to do. Help me if you can find the name, Angel. Okay, let's just play it. Here it is. Here's this ESPN reporter is trying to interview Patrick. She's asking a couple of questions, too. Patrick ain't having it.
There was a couple of chances this game, like many of the others, where within a bucket of possession here.
Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You subscribe to my pod?
Do I subscribe to you? I do not subscribe.
So you can't interview me then?
Okay.
No disrespect.
Well, Jamal is here.
You subscribe? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. You'll move that mic, please, or just get out the circle, please, for me, please, ma'am. If you're not subscribed to my pod, I appreciate that. Thank you.
What are we doing here? First off, did you notice the guns on this female reporter?
I did.
She's kind of shredded, man. I just noticed that. Like, she's holding the mic, and her right bicep is just absolutely jacked. So she's got the microphone in his face. I think she tried to ask a question, and he's like, no. Then he wouldn't even let her hold her recorder or whatever she had. She had a microphone.
Mm-hmm.
He told her to get rid of it. Go away. Like, what are we talking about here? Big Hub says breaking news. What do we have for Big Hub? And make sure we'll get fact checker Angel on it to make sure, because Big Hub might be trying to throw us for a loop. I'll read anything on the prompter. Eastside Chris says, interesting. MVP Embiid has not made it past round two in the playoffs. You mean the MVP?
That guy?
Yeah, it is interesting. What do you make of this Patrick Beverley thing? Because everybody's doing their own damn podcast now.
Yeah, and I get it. It's a way of self-promotion within, you know, people want to hear what I have to say. And you're a professional basketball athlete. It's cool. I know, I guess, J.J. Redick and LeBron James did a podcast together, and everyone's going nuts about that. But Pat Bev, I don't have a high opinion of him. His antics on the court or his attitude is not one I like in the sport. And this is kind of like, okay, that's Pat Bev. He's going to do stuff like that.
They shouldn't have to subscribe to your podcast. Like, every reporter should go unsubscribe to his podcast right
now. Bias or favoritism? Like, oh, I've heard everything you said on this podcast, so I'm going to ask you this type of question.
There's so many weird things that happen now. Social media has really opened up a completely different world for how we do media. Angel, breaking news. We do have it. Thank you, Big Hub, for the tip. We've got it, though. The Lakers are firing head coach Darvin Ham after 2 seasons. Ooh, boy. Joker got Darvin Ham fired. Jamal got Darvin Ham fired. He didn't know what to do to guard him. Jamal fired him. Jamal made a shot. Jamal fired coach.
Jamal does everything.
Jamal. Now they're going to open up their job search. One of the rumors I heard, Angel, was J.J. Redick.
Yeah, he's a name that's getting interviews.
He played against LeBron.
He did.
That would be weird.
I mean, Doc Rivers, is he available? He might be.
Yeah, what are the Lakers? Dude, how many head coaches have they gone through in the last just the last 5 years, 6, 7 years? Is it just two? Maybe it's just two, but it seems like a hell of a lot more. So is this on Darvin Ham, or is this just on the construction of the Lakers? I follow the Lakers pretty closely because of the Nuggets situation, but was it on Darvin Ham? There were times I thought he should have called a timeout. I didn't always like all of his post-game stuff, but again, I'd have to be a lot deeper of a Lakers insider to tell you if he really was the main problem in L.A.
Yeah, so I went back to just Kobe's last season, and that was Byron Scott was the head coach. He was only there for, I think, 2 years. Then they hired Luke Walton. He was there from 17 to 19, record of 98 and 148. Then it was Frank Vogel from 2020 to 2022.
So that was bubble coach, right?
Yep, he was 127 and 98. 18-9 in the postseason, and then Darvin Ham just this 1 year, 90-74.
So in LeBron's time there, which was basically what, 2018? 2019?
Yeah. It was a few years after. There was a weird two-year
gap.
They
missed the playoffs the year before they won the championship in the bubble, right?
Right.
Because LeBron was bad. They didn't have Anthony Davis yet.
Mm-hmm.
Then they got Anthony Davis and they won a championship. First year, I believe.
Yep.
So just in LeBron's time there, they went through two coaches. And Frank Vogel, you're bringing up Frank Vogel. Their sons are talking about firing him. I heard a rant by Charles Barkley on both Frank Vogel and Darvin Ham, and he said, you guys are idiots if you think they were the reason these teams are losing. And Frank Vogel, I feel like, has more staying power than that because he is a proven coach. He has been a good coach. I just think the Phoenix situation was like, hey, here's a bunch of stars. Figure it out. That can be difficult. Like, Malone? How would Malone do today? Seriously, put Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, and Devin Booker and just give them to Michael Malone and say, these are your guys now. Michael Malone might not be able to figure that out.
Yeah, Malone's a very defensive-oriented coach. I think that's what he prides himself on is how he draws up defense and he kind of leaves the offense to Jokic and Murray and just say, hey, I trust you guys to go out. I'm sure he draws up plays and stuff, but it's more of his focus is on the defense. So I don't know if you give him three ball-dominant players like that and say, hey, let's, because I'm sure that's what any coach would have to struggle with is how do I design plays that everyone's going to get this ball, everyone's going to at least touch the ball once.
Well, you're worrying about their egos, too.
Right.
Instead of just winning a game.
Guys that are on big contract, guys that are going to be wanting renegotiated contracts, and they need their stats to go into those meetings with.
I was talking to just another reference. I know it's cross sports and all that, but on my Football 52 podcast that I do with Ed Lamb, the UNC football coach, he was talking about David Afari coming in, setting goals, saying he wants to have 2,000 all-purpose yards, right? And one of the questions I had for Ed is, like, obviously you guys are tight, and you were worried that the meeting might have been about wanting to enter the portal. So you want him, you value him, you don't want to lose him. How do you balance the, okay, you want 2,000 yards? Well, what if the first 8 carries of the first game of the season, David Afari is just shut down, he's not seeing the holes right, he's not breaking any tackles, and they basically bring in another guy, this Caden Meese, to come in and say, hey, you're going to get the bulk of these carries. David Afari flips out on the sidelines and is like, what the hell, man? I stayed here and I got big goals, and you know that, and I only ended up getting 5 or 6 carries in this game. And so I asked Coach, I was like, "How? That's a tough balance because you want to keep the guy. You know he's good, but if he struggles, you have to pull the plug a little bit, but you don't want to piss him off to the point where, hey, he had these big goals, so he's got to be ready for game 2. Same in the NBA here. If you're a head coach with all these big names, you're thinking of, okay, we want to win, but what if we win and Booker's mad? Now Booker, there's kind of this tiff going on between these guys in the locker room. It's not good. You know the story about Carmelo. There were former players came out and said, dude, we could win a game and Melo would have like 12 points and he would be furious. He wouldn't talk to anybody. He'd put the towel over his head. We would lose a game, but Melo had 40. And he was like, let's go. We're hitting the club. We're going to hang out. Let's be He was as happy as a clam. That is a real thing that still exists in the NBA today. So that's why, you know, these coaches, it's not easy. And you say, oh, well, no. Phil Jackson had Michael Jordan. And Phil Jackson had Kobe Bryant. He dealt with so many different egos, so many different needs and wants that these players thought that they deserved. He had to press the right buttons. It is not as easy as just saying, hey, Frank Vogel, you're a star coach. We're going to bring in Durant, Beal, and Booker. We're going to team that up. You got to deal with it. Good luck. I mean, George Karl was told, and he told me this personally, when they made the trade for Allen Iverson, I believe, it was, hey, we're getting Iverson. And George is like, what? Yikes. That's going to be tough. I don't know if I can connect. Just coach him up, George. Then they shut the door. That was it. We got a stud. You didn't even know we were going after him. Here he is. Figure it out. That's the disconnect between your management and your head coach. So is this all on Darvin Ham? From what I saw, he didn't seem like that great of a coach, but I didn't like that he didn't call time. He didn't seem to call timeouts the right way. I mean, Malone is king of the rage timeouts. You didn't see a lot of that from Darvin Ham.
Well, how many coaches has, you know, we just talked about with just the Lakers. How about just LeBron himself? Is it a LeBron issue where he is a hard player to try to coach or even be the leader of that huddle when you know LeBron could just snatch the whiteboard and start drawing up his own plays?
Well, and you saw how mad he got when they didn't challenge a play. It was that game 4, the one the Lakers won, when he got so mad he turns and just starts ripping into the bench and the coaching staff. Jamal gets an easy layup because it's four on five, and LeBron is literally jumping up and down, throwing a temper tantrum. So the stuff we see on the outside, you got to think, man, this stuff's probably really bad in the locker room. So to answer your question, you go the coaches that he's played for in his career. So we go back to the Cleveland days. It was Paul Silas. Then it was Brendan Malone in 2005. Mike Brown, 2005 through 2010. That was all with Cleveland still, right?
Right.
Then he goes to Miami, and it's Eric Spoelstra. Okay.
He was still kind of fairly newish coaching at that point.
Yeah, he was. And he had staying power. Obviously, Pat Riley saw something there and was like, yeah, that guy's, we're gonna give it to him, whatever he wants. David Blatt, 2014 and 16, that would have been back to Cleveland, correct? Tyronn Lue, and that was in Cleveland as well, right?
Yep.
Then he went to the Lakers. Look at that, though. Okay, so with Cleveland, from 2003 to 2010, we're talking 7 years.
About the same amount of time Michael Malone has coached the Nuggets, right?
Yep.
He's been there 8 or 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
You went through three coaches. Silas, Malone, and Brown. Spoelstra, the one outlier, because Spoelstra, I think, truly was valued enough to rise above LeBron's antics. And then he goes back to Cleveland, and in four years, 2014 through 2018, he busts through two coaches with Blatt and Tyronn Lue. And then from 2019 was his first year with the Lakers to 2024, so 5 more years, he's busted through two more coaches. You got to look at the trend here. How many coaches has Joker had?
One.
Yeah. How many coaches did Duncan have? One. Didn't Dirk have Carlisle the whole time?
I believe so, yeah.
I'm not saying it's all on LeBron. Just the Lakers not finding consistency, but it's not just the Lakers thing.
No, I can't imagine. Like, if you're not a veteran player, but you've been in the league for a few years, and now you're on the Lakers, and it's LeBron James is in your huddle, are you listening to him, or are you listening to Coach? Probably going to listen to LeBron because he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, man. I mean, that is...
I'd rather him yell at me in the huddle than yell at me on the court.
Sure. You've heard about stuff going on with LeBron and certain players and how Russell Westbrook... I mean, again, Westbrook has his stuff, but he hated it there, man. He hated it.
Oh, yeah.
So it's probably a LeBron thing. And I know LeBron fans don't want to hear it, but 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 coaches in his, how long has he played? 19 years?
Mm-hmm.
That 9 coaches in 19 years. That's just, you have to start looking at the common thread here, and that is LeBron James. Now, in fairness, Malone, let's be fair here. Malone was hired as the interim coach because Paul Silas was fired in the 2005 season.
Mm.
So Brendan Malone came on, and he was the interim head coach. And then you went and got Mike Brown, who you thought would solve everything.
That's a lot more than I thought.
Oh, it's more than I thought. I thought maybe two during his time in Cleveland. Maybe three, because he had two stints.
Mm-hmm.
But he went through Silas, and then Malone doesn't really count, but there was still Mike Brown, so you went through two there, and then you went through two more when you went back to Cleveland. Like, that's a theme. And then you just busted through two in L.A.
Well, and then, like, the years between got smaller and smaller.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, as LeBron's popularity and his ability and his legacy starts to grow once he leaves out of Miami, he's going through coaches at a quicker rate.
Yeah, Mike Brown was the longest. He went for 5 years with LeBron, 2005 through 2010. Even Spoelstra was just 4 years, but LeBron left. Spoelstra's still there. Lue was 2 seasons. Walton was just a season, right?
Mm-hmm.
Frank Vogel was three seasons, and then Darvin Ham had two, and he has 2 years left on his contract. Eastside Chris says, point is, who does LeBron want? Well, it's all
Doc
about
Rivers.
It's all about LeBron.
Yeah,
the Lakers. I don't know if they're serious about winning a championship. They want LeBron James. So they're going to say, what do you want? And my guess is you need a different coach that can see eye to eye with me. And then it's going to be, okay, how do we go get Bronny? And that's going to be, I mean, those are going to be the demands. We already know that the Lakers are open to making sure they get Bronny in this deal, in the draft or whatever. And that's how they could keep LeBron James.
The top potential candidates are J.J. Redick and Tyronn Lue.
What?
Yep.
Again?
Yep.
Well, and Lue didn't get... Did Lue stay in Cleveland 1 year after LeBron left?
I think he was there for
another
year after, yeah.
Okay, so to be fair, LeBron left Mike Brown, and LeBron left Tyronn
Lue. But he didn't really... Not that they didn't get along, but it was kind of like okay, Tyronn, I'm LeBron James. I don't need you to coach me.
Yeah, name one guy that has felt like you saw the connection like Pop had with Duncan.
Sure.
Or Joker with Malone. Or Phil with Kobe. Phil with Jordan. LeBron has not had... That's one of the things that we need to be discussing in our GOAT conversation. Who was the most coachable?
Mm-hmm.
And
or who just had that kind of relationship with their coach?
Yeah, Jordan had he did have a coach before Phil Jackson got there. I believe
I think he had, oh, you know him. Good commentator, all this stuff. I can't, I'm blanking out right now.
Doug Collins?
Yeah, was it Doug? Did Jordan have him for, what, a year?
That looks right.
But that wasn't anything to do with Jordan.
Yeah, he was the coach in 85 and 86, and then they hired Phil Jackson.
Yeah, at least according to the documentary, it wasn't really, that wasn't a Jordan thing, I don't think. Mm-hmm. So I think Jordan and Collins
were good.
It was
more like an organizational thing.
Yeah.
They were like, we have this rookie of the year, Michael Jordan. We need to make sure we have a coach that can take us to the next level.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure Jordan and Collins, they were good, man. Like, they were good together. Like, Jordan liked him. So, but name a close relationship that LeBron has had like that with any of these guys. I'm hearing Shea talk about their coach at OKC, and he's like, we are extremely close. Like, mm-hmm. we have a great relationship. You don't really hear that with LeBron.
Mm-mm.
It's just, who's going to be the guy that pretends he's the boss?
Sure.
Because we all know who's running the show here.
Or who's going to go there and not be, you know, a kiss-up to LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
And try to be that, hey, buddy, LeBron, yeah. And it's like, no, we're not friends, coach.
Malone probably would be a pretty good coach for LeBron. Just throwing.
I think there's a respect there.
Yeah. Not that we would ever want to mess with that.
Have with him.
But I think he would actually be good for him. 26 minutes after the hour, Sean Keeler's going to join us at the bottom of the hour from the Denver Post. We'll talk primetime. We'll talk Nuggets, T-Wolves. We'll talk Avs. All that and more coming up. It's a whole show powered by Chevron on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Are available at 1310kfk.com.
This is Nico Medved, the men's basketball coach of the Colorado State Rams, and you're listening to The Hull Show on 1310 KFKA.
12:30 the time. We got Nuggets, Timberwolves going on tomorrow. 5 o'clock is the tip-off for that game, game one. So I personally like the night games because I like to just sit down and be my weird self and nervous and all that alone. Or my wife's there watching with me typically, but I'll be watching and the kid's going to be wanting to play and do all that stuff. And it's going to be like, hey, kid, sorry, dad's got to not be a dad for about 2.5 hours here, okay? 31 minutes after the hour, Sean Keeler, Denver Post, coming up next. We'll talk to him about primetime, about Nuggets, about Avs, all of that coming up next. But first, let's get the latest on the local sports flash.
There's only one feeling like knowing your banker personally. Like growing up with a bank you can count on. Like being sure what you've earned is safe, secure, and local. There's only one feeling like knowing you're supporting your community. You deserve more from a bank. You deserve an institution that stood strong for generations. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.
Hey, this is Sean Keeler of the Denver Post. You're listening to The Hull Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Sean Keeler joining us now from the Denver Post. I love reading your stuff, Sean, and I know people are mean to you sometimes, but dude, you get us thinking.
That never happened. I never attacked on X. I never attacked with email. It's all love.
Do you shut down your messages so nobody can reach out and slide into the DMs, as the kids call it?
No, because I'd miss your request to come on the air. You do get tempted, but I'll tell you what, I wasn't nearly as tempted before Deion Sanders walked into my life.
Oh my gosh, man! I don't know how you do it. I dabble once in a while, and it's like, okay, if I tweet something even remotely negative about the Buffs, well, there goes my day. And I can't imagine you who, you know, you have to go at guys. You got to call people out. I don't care if you're the biggest Buffs fan in the history of the world. You still got to go after people, and that's what I respect about you, Sean.
Thank you. I respect that you've got your life together, and I don't. But no, you do. And
yeah.
And I thank you, and yeah, that's in the job description, and sometimes you're going after, Jared Bednar, and sometimes you're going after, you're going after Sean Payton a lot lately. You know, that is the gig, and people love their guy. But the thing with Deion that's so different is, like, a lot of these people are not CU fans. They're just Deion fans. It is just, as we've talked about, the cult of Prime is its own thing. And when he goes, it will go with him, and the diehards will be left, and they're going to be very, very lonely when that day comes.
Oh, I mean, that's, I'll be, you know, we'll see how that kind of falls out. I would imagine they won't ever talk about see you again when primetime goes away. Okay, but Keeler, what did you think of the recent stuff? This week has been just absolute chaos, entertaining as hell. But you got another former player going out, Xavier Smith, talking about how primetime dealt with him and how it didn't really get to know him and all that, and he was kind of emotional. Then you have, of course, Shedeur Sanders putting out the tweet. Hey, I don't remember how he wrote it. I had to have Angel translate it for me. I'm old.
He said he's mid, which is apparently the worst thing you can call anybody ever. I've learned in my old age. So my wife calls me mid all the time. I thought she was just pointing in my midsection because I'm built like Homer Simpson.
Well, I thought when he started the tweet, you know, when he meant to say I don't even know him. It was Ion, and we were in science class for a minute. I don't know, but we have Shedeur basically saying that, Sean, you know, this player, I don't even remember him being on the team. He must have been pretty mid. And then another guy tweeting out, you know, hey, why is Shedeur talking like this? He went 4-8 last year. Primetime responds by saying, my son's going top five, where's your son going? I mean, if you took Primetime's name off those tweets, you'd just be like, who's this random person? This is just a random Buffs fight going on amongst fans.
Yeah. The level of discourse is a little... I'm curious what triggered the defensiveness to them on X, or what person at Smack or Michael Strahan or Constance Schwartz-Marini said to them, yeah, we got to do a little damage on this, or here's how we do this, because Deion doesn't do all his socials. The little guy runs around with him, Sam, does a lot of this stuff. And so I'm not sure the genesis of this. And they do stuff for showbiz shock as well, because this is a TV show. We've talked about this one. I already wrote this story a year ago. You may remember when Jordan Tyson was among the first guys out, and we all went, wait a minute, kind of thing. Like, so this was not news, although then Prime getting mad about it makes it news, and doing stupid stuff on X makes it news, one. Two, I think, and this is going to sound like a cop-out, but this is the God's honest truth, all sides are right. I don't know that Xavier Smith was a great player. I don't know that he's better than what they just brought in from the portal. I don't know that he was going to play. He knew he wasn't going to play. There were a bunch of those guys who were not going to play. Should they have been run out in the way that they were run out? No. Should they have been humiliated on Deion Sanders Jr.'s well-off media bleeping channel? No. No one deserves that. But this is what you get when you hire him, because you also get this much money that when their fiscals are wrapping up next month, I want to say, is probably going to be pretty good after a lot of bad years. And you got the worst coach in the history of coaches to be named Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year. That is not hyperbole. Look up the people who have won it. And you have your AD named AD of the Year. I think they were willing to throw those kids under the bus who were on that 1-11 team for that. So, yeah, now let me say the other thing that's right. Xavier Smith might have been kind of mid relative to what Shedeur thinks is mid. It's also a clown show. So Xavier was right. All those things are true. Does that make sense? Like, I think all those things are, in fact, the reality of the situation, and they divorced, and unlike a lot of former Buffs, Xavier wanted to talk about it. So here we are.
Well, and this is the tough part. Like, I'm really trying, you know, last year when this primetime stuff started, I didn't get too high on it. And I'm not anti-Buffs. I think people that, if they do actually listen to the show, I lean a little closer to the CSU Rams, but I root for the Buffs. I root for my pick when they play each other. But when this happened, I thought, okay, I'm not getting too high on this. We'll see. I mean, he's great for clicks, and he is great for getting you know, eyeballs on him. So that's awesome. That's amazing. So that's great. It's the McCaffrey move on mega steroids. Oh, honestly.
Yeah, you're the second person to say that to me in 12 hours.
I mean, that's the thing. That's the thing, dude. And then you have this year, everyone's against him. The national media is kind of turning. And I say this and people think that's a cop-out, but I'm like, maybe the truth is somewhere in between. And it kind of goes to what you're saying, that Deion.
No, I do. I think, yeah, all those things are true.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're coming around to it. Yeah, like, and they can be. They're not. The thing about Deion that is, and I agree with him 70% of the time, and I'm sorry to interrupt. We talked.
No.
And I think you agree with him a lot of the time.
Sure.
You know, he says the common sense parts out loud. He says the quiet parts out loud. Our spring games just, yeah, it'd be better if it was a scrimmage with somebody else. Yes, I agree with Prime there. Do kids recruit kids and kids need to recruit, you know, their own peers? Yes, I agree with him there. Is Pat Shurmur a good offensive coordinator and do the best assistant coaches in the country want to work with him? No, they do not. They want to avoid this like the plague because it's a three-ring circus for the reasons that we're talking about. But all those things are true, and they can be true, but Deion has to make it, and this is not a race thing, it is simply a color on a spectrum thing. He removes the gray area. He makes it black or white. You're for or against us, and there is no middle. And I think you and I are in this shrinking middle that we're trying to stay on, and like the scene in the trash compactor in Star Wars A New Hope. Like, we're running out of room. I mean, there you go. There's your Gen X reference. Keeler doesn't understand mid, and he made a 1977 movie reference. Yeah, I'm old. But you see what I mean? Like, he can't accept that all these things can be true. He's like, well, either I'm the greatest or you hate me. Well, that's not how that works. I think you're one of the greatest football players ever. I don't think you're one of the greatest coaches ever. And both those things, I think, are true.
Keeler, right? What is it like for you? I mean, because obviously you've written positive things about primetime and the Buffs. You've written negative things. Yes.
Yeah,
sure.
I couldn't believe it. Everyone got really quiet on my hate.
Yeah.
I went from the most racist sports columnist at the Denver Post to the least racist in about 5 days.
That
has never happened.
That's actually pretty good by you, man.
Yeah.
I might need to hire you as my PR guy at some point.
No, you don't want that.
Okay,
no.
So what is it like for you at press conferences or at any function where you are in front of primetime? What is that like? Is it tense?
No. I mean, not for me, because he kind of labeled me as unfriendly fire a year ago. Like once I kind of fell off the wagon with the whole Sean Lewis thing. And believe me, as you no doubt have heard, Sean Lewis may have been off the Sean Lewis wagon. I've been off that wagon a lot
right.
earlier than anybody thought. As the things that we find out, I get a lot of, what do you know more that you can't say? And I'm like, a lot. So I was kind of like, you know, I'd been warned about certain things, dude, and here we go. I had a better scouting report on Deion than Deion had of me because he didn't care. He doesn't care about Brian Howell unless he makes him mad. It's a tricky thing that we're all kind of dealing with locally. But is it tense? The only drama is, given that I've been told they may not call on me and my question will be picked last, will I get it in? I have to make hand signals like the sideline of a football game to CUPR to go, can I? And I have been told off the record by other media that I think you have been told you either get to go last or not at all because you're on the poop list.
Wow.
Fine. I'm trying to do a job. It's his program for now. It's his town for now. It's his rules for now. That's fine. He has been, I said this to you on air, and I've said it to others, and I'll say it again. That said, he has not ducked a question I've asked him since the barking up a wrong tree thing. And even then, he was funny and dodged it in a funny way. He has engaged me and has not ignored it entirely or slammed it down. Now, that could change. And at Jackson, he had guys on his poop list banned from pressers. So he hasn't done that, but will that change? I don't know.
Well, yeah, that would be, I mean, I'm actually surprised we haven't seen some of that just
too.
Yet. You know?
I have too. I expected I'd be first on that list.
Oh,
and it hasn't happened yet.
Sure. Like, I mean, this is your job, and you, like I said, dude, you have a job to do. You have to be critical, and you also have to end up, you know, guys like you go back to the pressers. Even knowing you were just critical, you still show up, and that's why I have such mad respect for writers. And, you know, on the daily, you're doing this. Let me ask you this, though, from a personal standpoint, do you enjoy covering primetime, or do you get to the point where it's like, I'm kind of dreading this. I don't want to go to this thing today because who knows what's going to be said or what's going to happen.
Right. I'm going to defer to my earlier week political answer and say both those things are true.
Hey, no, well,
no, because they are. Because there are days, and it depends on the moment and the mood. Where, yeah, I woke up. Mostly, it isn't. And actually, the moments about, oh, I got to deal with Dion this, is not about actually dealing with Dion, because he doesn't give us that air quote privilege all that often. He runs to his buddies and runs to the national podcast. He does his own radio row off on a circle, either with people locally who have paid for that access or with national people who have paid for that access, or they are in his inner circle or are in his inner circle and have paid for that access. And the rest of us are just stuff.
Yeah.
That detracts the way I believe he has to do. It is in his contract that he kind of has to deal with us, but he deals with us as little as conceivably possible for that reason, because it is all about the messaging and the brand. And the brand just happens to be CU right now, but the brand is Prime. The brand is him. It's the 21. It's not the black and gold. It's him all the time. So, but when I engage with him, I enjoy it. I'll say that on the record and to all your audience. I've never not been at least amused, and you hear a bad whiny cackle. It's probably me in the news, as you know, what my laugh sounds like. You know, because it's terrible. Yeah, I am. Yeah, I'm not Homer Simpson. I'm Peter Griffin. I look like a bad scientific experiment between the two of them now. So yeah, but it is amusing, and he is entertaining as heck. I hope his football team will be. It often is, but we will see.
Well, and I'm with you on that. Like, for a radio guy, like, I love what primetime offers. Good, bad, the ugly, it doesn't matter. Yeah. That's content that we can
boring.
Go off of. No, and like you said, there are a lot of things, and again, when I say the truth is probably somewhere in the middle, there are a lot of things that I like about him. You know, I do think that he does things in a calculated way. He is getting attention to this program, more attention than we've seen any program that was like CU with their history should be getting. So that alone tells you, yeah, this guy's worth it. No question about it. It's just a couple
of... I've written that too.
Yeah.
I said, look, this was a win for the school year one, even if they only won four games, which they probably weren't going to win more than five anyway. Now, the bar for competition changes for this year, as we've talked about and we will talk about, sure.
What is that? I mean, what's considered a failure? Like the best record that would be considered a failure for CU?
I'd say not bowling is a failure.
So five wins, failure. Six wins, okay.
So I'd say if it looks like, you know, let's be bi-coastal and an equal opportunity rear end here. If they look like CSU looked last year in some close games that didn't get over the line, and I like the folks over there, but even they know that was, I mean, you had Mo Kamara, you had the best pass rusher in the Mountain West and the best wide receiver, and you went 5-7. I have a tough one with that. So as context, if CU with that kind of talent, again, no one's saying they aren't getting dudes. They're getting dudes. How quickly those dudes gel, whether you could build an offensive line in 3 months with those dudes, I'm not sure, but they have dudes. Those dudes should win 6 to 8 games. And I don't think that's unreasonable. I think Prime, when he's not talking playoffs, which is insanity, thinks that's I think everyone should think that's reasonable. But if they don't get there, I'm torn between whether everyone just quits
once.
You know, because everything is possible, or he's so angered by 4-8 plus 5-7 and selling everyone that 5-7 is an improvement, which it is. I don't dispute that relative to where he has set the bar, that more people fall off the bandwagon, less tickets get sold, and then that cycle perpetuates. But he wants to prove it so badly that he's back for whatever reason, until they've got a quarterback committed who's playing in 2026, I don't believe it. You probably need to go. We won't do the whole, is he staying, is he going? Until I see a QB that's ready to play after Shadur's in the draft at this time next year, I'll believe it when I see it. And even then, it remains to be seen. But I don't know. Everything is on, you know, back to the entertainment thing, everything is on the table and anything is possible. And that's the remarkable thing about this. And to be honest, it's something we will miss when the circus comes and goes.
No question. I do agree with you on that. Sean Keeler, great stuff from you as always, my man. Some fun write-ups, too, on the Nuggets T-Wolves series coming up this weekend. I'm up against it, though. Always appreciate your insight. Doing this with you on a regular basis, it's phenomenal, man. Appreciate it.
Anytime, my man. Aaron Gordon column, folks. Check it out. DenverPost.com. Your playoff time. We get no sleep.
I got to pull it up right now. I'm going to read it a little bit later, my man. All right, Sean, we'll talk to you
Thanks,
soon,
brother.
Man. All right. Sean Keeler, Denver Post. He's fun to talk to. And he gets it. This is what I'm saying. Like, there are good things and not so good things about what primetime's doing. And you have to be able to filter and sift through what is. And if you can't, then you're too far on one side or the other. And I get that. We'll talk about that a little bit more. React to his chat moments ago. We'll get into that coming up next.
Hear it again. Podcasts are available at 1310kfk.com.
This is Jeff Linder, head men's basketball coach of the University of Wyoming Cowboys, and you're listening to The Whole Show on 1310 KFKA.
What experience do, outside of winning the NBA title...
What more do you need?
No, I'm saying, outside of that, what experience do they have that Minnesota doesn't? Minnesota's been in the playoffs.
Well, Minnesota hasn't been on a deep run in the playoffs.
Keyshawn Johnson, when he's not cheering for guys to get hurt and then getting mad that because we took it that way, says that other than winning a championship, that little thing that they did, what experience do the Nuggets have over the Timberwolves in the playoffs? I mean, what have the Timberwolves done the last 3 years? How far did they go in the playoffs?
2021, they went 2-4 in the first. They lost the first round 4-2 against the Grizzlies. Last year, they lost the first round 4-1 against the Nuggets. And they had missed the previous three seasons. You have to go back to 2017, where they lost to the Rockets in a 4-1 series. Their last series win in the playoffs came in 2003. They won the first round against the Nuggets and the second round against the Kings.
In 2003. That was Kevin Garnett, right? Still,
yeah.
I think.
Lost to the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals.
2003 was your last first round win. The Nuggets have, without looking at it right off the bat, they've been past the first round every time with Malone, save for... the Golden State year, which was the year before the championship when Jamal and Porter were out, correct? Five out of six of their playoff runs, they've been at least out of the first round?
Yep.
Yeah, and the one year that they weren't was when Porter and Jamal were both out. What are we doing, ESPN? You got Keyshawn cheering about a guy getting hurt. Keyshawn coming back and saying, why are you guys taking it that way? Because you laughed and said yay when you found out Jamal might not play in game five. And then you do no research and say, what experience do the Nuggets have over the Timberwolves other than the championship? How about every single year? Like the last five. Buy or sell coming up next.
This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Greeley, one team like the UNC Bears, and one bank who cheers as loud as you do. Bank of Colorado, proud partner of UNC Athletics, member FDIC.